we've done segments before, right, about the manipulation that grocery retailers use to on us customers every single time we walk through the door, the second we walk through the door. It's pretty fascinating. I really like talking about it and exploring it. Like, you ever notice that almost all grocery stores are laid out basically in the exact same configuration, right? Like, think about this, for example. When you go to buy milk, and I don't care what grocery store it is, where is it? It's typically, you go in the door, let's say front right, the milk is at the back left, right? And that's Costco, that's Sobeys, that's Safeway, it doesn't matter. Why? Well, because then you have to walk past everything in the store in order to get the one item that you needed to pick up, right? And it happens all the time. And it goes beyond that, like which items occupy which shelves, like how high up they are. You know, are they at eye level or are they way down low? All these, nothing is left to chance. Everything is planned. Now, it goes beyond geography. We're going to talk about another strategy that retailers deploy with great effect. Loss leaders. I always thought it was lost leaders, but I guess it's loss leaders. But you've probably heard the term before, but let's find out what they are, how they're used, and you know how effective they can be. We're going to speak with Andreas Becker. Andreas is in Guelph, joining us from Guelph Chair at the University of Guelph's Food, Agricultural, and Resource Economics Department. Andreas, did I get the name right? First of all, let's start there. Did I get it right?
You did. Thank you.
Excellent. Good. Okay. Glad to hear it. So let's start. Loss leaders. What are we talking about here? I think we're familiar with it once you explain it to us. But when we say loss leader, what do we mean?
Well, it's a pricing strategy that's used by retailers to get customers into the store. And as the name implies, it's they're priced very low so that they're sometimes below cost, so actually running a loss for the retailer. But could also be just a very small or negligible margin that they're creating. And the objective of the retailer is to get the customers to see this loss leader as a win, so that they, and a bargain, so that they sort of open up their mind, become less price sensitive towards other items in the store, so that the retailer overall is better off because they make a lot more sales and margin with the other items that the customer buys.
Right. So it's, hey, we're going to take a loss on this, but we're going to get people in the door and put them in the frame of mind to spend money. So it's a calculated risk on behalf of the retailer. We're going to get you in here and then we'll start from there, right?
Yes. And then, of course, you have to see it in the bigger picture that in the last 20 years, so 20 years ago, the loss leader was basically advertised through the flyer.
Yeah.
And but now we've moved towards omnichannel retailing, where there's the online ordering, you have the social media. In Canada, not so much, but some of the stores have their own apps. You have in-store promotions, then yeah, the flyers, and the membership or the loyalty programs and reward programs. And they all have their ways of attracting their... They can now be coordinated in a much better way because of data analytics and the capacities that the retailers have to get customers into the store.
And we're all familiar with them. I think the one that people talk about a lot is the rotisserie chicken at Costco. That's famous, right?
Yes.
They sell them for like $8 and everybody buys them. That is your stereotypical, it's the prototype of a loss leader, right?
Well, there is, yes, you could say there are two types of loss leaders. One is the one based on or working on habit, because you know that Costco offers that. You go there, it's been cheap forever, you can rely on that. For example, bananas would fall in the same category, that they are priced very low. Which other fruit would you get for less than $1 per pound?
Right.
And then they are the ones that basically work on surprise, and that's where it gets, so that's a markdown in the price that's really significant. And that's where it gets a little bit more complicated, because these can be advertised, yeah, so then they would attract the people in the store. But you also have sort of surprise markdowns in the store that are only visible in the store. So once you are there, you might also get into the habit of exploring these aisles, because once in a while there's a good bargain to be made.
Gotcha. Okay. And I imagine they're pretty judicious about what they use as a loss leader, right? They don't want to offer up something that you can stock up on. They want something that is a one-off or something outside of the staples, I would think, right?
Yes. because that would be a big risk. You mentioned it, stockpiling. Once an item is can be stockpiled. So I'm from Germany, and 30 years ago, some retailers tried to use coffee as a loss leader. Mm-hmm. And of course, that backfired because people, and they didn't put a limit on it, how much you could buy. So people just bought the coffee and left the store. So that, of course, is the risk that the retailer doesn't want to face. So it's staples that the customer buys on a regular basis. And so that the retailer knows they will come back for buying this into our store. And quite often you see this with perishable products, for example, for the surprise category. So when the price is lowered significantly, that's what fresh produce is ideal for, because you can't stockpile the fresh produce.
Right, exactly. And the staples, I mean, is it harder to put them? I mean, like, I know for a guy who was on TV for a long time, black suits never went on sale, because guys always buy black suits, whether they're on sale or not. Everybody needs a black suit. So they very rarely go on sale. So I imagine when it comes to, like, butter, bread, milk, eggs, those kinds of things, they're not used as loss leaders because people are going to buy them anyway, right?
Yes, but it's also, I mean, let's call it the psychology of grocery shopping.
Yeah.
As I said, for example, if you are really, if you reliably low in the price on certain items, and it's not across the entire, let's say, the entirety of what's offered for example, for dairy products. But if you have a few, let's say, signature items that are really consistently low priced, you will attract people to the store.
Right.
And the other items can then be priced, let's say, normal or a little bit higher.
Gotcha. And
it's very difficult for customers or consumers to keep track of that, especially after what we've seen during the pandemic, when prices were fluctuating a lot more and a lot more often and a lot more in range than they used to.
I mean, if you're a really savvy customer or consumer, Andreas, I would think you can do pretty well with this, right? If you can find the loss leader and not get sucked into expanding your shopping experience beyond the loss leader, you can actually come out ahead.
Yeah, so that requires planning and discipline. And then, of course, it's also very difficult now with the prices having gone up and down so much that it's really difficult to say, well, what is really a good deal? Where I can say, well, I go to that store and maybe incur a little bit of extra time and gas expenses to save $20. Yeah, if I can stockpile it, for example. But the problem now with the prices going up and down quite a lot, it's very difficult to compare between stores now. And there used to be a clear difference between, let's say, what traditionally is called an everyday low price retailer.
Yeah.
For example, No Frills in Ontario would be one. Or a high-low retailer that would be at the higher end, and they would mark down high-value items significantly to attract customers. And the everyday low price retailer would be consistently lower across all product categories. But now that is changing. Yeah. So sometimes the everyday low price retailer is more expensive than the higher end retailer on certain product categories.
And this is a game that the big retailers have an easier time playing, right? I mean, with the volume and all the rest of it, they can take a little more of a hit on some items. I mean, imagine if you're a smaller retailer, this is a tougher proposition.
It's very tough. And this can only, and the large retailers have all invested significantly into their IT capacity, into being able to track what customers are buying. So they're not only able to buy to track the individual purchases of items, but also what's in the basket.
Gotcha.
So they could, and when you go back maybe 15, 20 years, everybody was amazed when Amazon could track what you had searched, and then they could make suggestions for other items. The retailers are, I think, now in a position where they can track an awful lot of individuals' purchasing behavior and then group them into segments according to purchasing behavior, and then, make calculated price changes, which will, in the end, make them better off.
Yeah, makes so much sense. So just be smart about it. Little planning, like you said. Andreas, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Shay.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.